Regularly scheduled programming. I wanted to start out this review with us talking about something that, so me and Rachel are in a group chat, and a specific text had came in, and this was not the first time I had heard it. So I just feel, since we do reviews and pop culture, just anything related, I think it's worth mentioning. I think it's kind of a shame that I have heard from a few different sources of how Hollywood is getting ready to go on strike, and not in the sense of Hollywood going on strike, but the reason behind it of actors and production companies and everything are just not getting paid as well as they should be.
Yeah, we got a text about this from a friend of ours this morning. And at first when I heard about it, I was like, well, is there like something related to the pandemic going on? Or is there like protection for people? Which I'm sure there's a lot of that going on. All of us, I know a lot of us are fatigued with having to continuously keep up with everything after having to deal with this for so long now. But it's actually just related to basic union stuff or basic work stuff, where it's just they're not getting paid properly. They're not getting the proper compensation for the hard work that they're doing to bring us all the great entertainment that they do.
Yeah. And another group that I'm in on Facebook, they were mentioning that as well. Somebody that they're friends with, they had mentioned the same thing. And a lot of it is, if I remember to sum it up, that they were saying it is due to things like Netflix or Hulu, these companies that are streaming, that actors, actresses, production, whatnot, can't make as much money as they were when it was on live TV, or with things like getting it from DirecTV and whatnot. So if it's a matter of not being paid enough, just pay the people. Give them the money they deserve.
Yes, I totally agree. I was going to ask you, I know that you keep up with stuff like this, but I don't know if you watch the Nintendo Directs as they come out on YouTube and stuff. Okay, so I always keep up with the Nintendo Directs, especially ever since Breath of the Wild came out. I've been waiting for them to drop any information on Breath of the Wild 2. So every single time they drop a Nintendo Direct, I'm just watching it purely for that. Even when I know they're not going to give me any information for that, I still watch it, hoping that they will. But what was really exciting about this most recent Nintendo Direct that they did was they are with the same people who make the Minions movies, are making a Mario animated film.
I had seen that, and they had also released the cast, so it was quite interesting, all the different casts that they have said that are joining.
I'm actually really, really excited about this movie. The cast sounds amazing. I have one gripe, though, and I think everybody will agree with me when I say that Chris Pratt, really? Really?
It's funny that you say that, because I honestly was thinking the same thing, that I feel like they could have gotten maybe a newer actor to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, like I just didn't understand the casting at all. Like, the only thing I liked about it was they were announcing Chris Pratt. They were like, oh, he's so cool. And that was really adorable. But other than that, like, I was just like, I don't know if he's going to like be able to really bring Mario to life. I don't know if I want to listen to Chris Pratt do an accent for an hour and a half, potentially. Clay keeps telling me, he's like, you just don't like Chris Pratt. And I'm just like, no, it's not that. It's just, I don't think he's good for the role. But I guess I'll wait till the trailer to make a full decision. But Jack Black is as Bowser. Ooh, I'm excited for that.
Yeah, that one's a good choice, because he's very, so the videos that I've seen on his TikTok, he's very crazy and fun. And then just all of the past roles that he's done too, I think he is a good choice for playing Bowser. And it is quite interesting just to see all of the rest of the cast. And so I want to see, I'm looking right here and I'm scrolling through Google right now, and Vanity Fair posted something 2 days ago, and it says, Italians, gamers, and jokesters unite against Chris Pratt's casting in Super Mario.
Yes, because I mean, like, I don't. They should have actually just, like, I mean, there's so many other people that would have been great. And then, like, what's infuriating about the entire thing is they're having the actual voice of Mario, who's been the voice of Mario in the games, come in for cameos. Why not just have him be Mario?
I'm sitting here blinking, looking into the hibisk. Yeah.
I think somebody, one person suggested Danny DeVito, and I think I would have loved that over Chris Pratt. Like, ugh.
Yeah, and it's not hating on him or anything. It's just the sense of, yeah, I think they could have maybe chosen somebody else for the role. But we'll see. Maybe we'll be surprised. I think there's been plenty of times that we've seen that with actors and actresses being cast as specific roles and everyone said, no, it's not going to work. I mean, I could sit here and say Heath Ledger to play the Joker or Margot Robbie for Harley Quinn, or I can't think of anything else.
I'm going to say this, like, I was going to save this for if we ever talked about this movie on podcast. I didn't think Han Solo was going to be, or the guy that they picked for Han Solo for the Solo movie, I didn't think he was going to be good at all. I was like, I don't like this guy. And 5 minutes into the movie, I was just, like, chomping on my popcorn, like, I love this! Give me more! Give me more!
So, yeah, we'll see when the film comes out. It's supposed to come out next winter, right?
Yeah, I think they said winter 2022.
All right. Let's get back to our regularly scheduled services. I don't think that's the right verbiage, but sorry, everybody, that we did not have our regular normal content that we do every week. As we say all the time, it is life. We just get, things get hectic.
Yes.
But this week, we are excited to be doing a newer film that came out this year, and I think it did fairly well. I'm going to say it did. I enjoyed this film. It surprised me because I am always the person to say, Disney, any live-action remakes, but arguably, this wasn't a remake. It is a redone character, but the concept is completely new.
I was really excited about this movie, mostly because I have been reading the Disney villain books, and I think they have one on Cruella. I haven't read that one, but I've read a few of the other ones, and I really enjoy how they're doing different takes on the villains and explaining mm-hmm. more of why they behave the way that they behave. In a lot of the books, they're not excusing their behavior in any way. They're just being like, this is why they are the way they are. Mm-hmm. And I've been really enjoying the different takes on them. The one that they did on Beast was probably one of my favorites. So this just felt like that to me. Just watching one of those books, but about Cruella instead of one of the other villains I've read about, and it was really, really enjoyable. And I was so excited when they announced this, because for one thing, I don't like Cruella, obviously, from 101 Dalmatians. Like any sane person, like, I mean, why would you like her? The only good thing about her was she had, like, cool fashion choices. Yeah. But other than that, she's a dog killer. Nobody can get behind a dog killer. That's, like, literally the worst thing you can be. So when I heard that Emma Stone was going to be the person to play Cruella, I got really, really excited because I felt like she was going to bring this certain kind of energy to the character that I was excited to see.
See, I can say completely opposite. I was not sure how she was going to do in this role because I don't think we've seen her play anything that's very menacing or very evil. So it was very interesting to see her take on this role, and I think she did a great job. I really loved this movie, and I don't want to go any further on my thoughts until the end of our review, obviously.
I do want to just say this, though. Do you want to know, like, what kind of vibe this movie gave me? It felt very Devil Wears Prada, but if Disney made it.
Yes, I 100% agree with that, because it was a fashion-forward film. All of the outfits were gorgeous, and everything was just so well done, and it did have, you're so right, that exact feel of Miranda Priestly and Annie.
The Baroness.
Yes, and that's probably why I enjoyed this film, because I love the Devil Wears Prada, so.
Yeah.
But before we get into the film, I want to just speak on the cast. And I think they did a great job choosing everybody for their prospective roles. So as we said, Emma Stone played Estella, or soon to be known as Cruella de Vil. Emma Thompson playing the Baroness, which she is a chameleon. She has played many amazing roles in her lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joel Fry, who played Jasper, which I thought he was a perfect Jasper because the only other thing I've seen him in was Game of Thrones. So it was cool to see him in another role. Who else do we have? We have Paul Walter Hauser. I hope I said that right. Who played Horace. John McCree, who played Artie. Again, I hope I pronounced his name. I'm sorry if I don't. Mark Strong. played John, and then Kirby Howell-Bapstee, who played Anita Darling.
Anita!
Yeah, and so many other people who were in this film, but well done on the cast.
The cast really brought this movie to life in the best way. It was enjoyable to watch all of the characters. There wasn't really anybody I disliked either. I mean, like, outside of the Baroness, but I mean that in a good way. She was just so easy to dislike and just did a wonderful job bringing the character to life. I absolutely hated the Baroness.
And I love that they added in these new characters, obviously, and did a lot of things that were different and explained a lot of things. And yeah, so into that, I would say that one first thing that comes up for reviews before recapping is I love that they did change Horace and Jasper, where they were friends of Cruella, where in 101 Dalmatians we thought they were just henchmen.
Yeah, just her henchmen, but no, they're actually childhood friends, and I absolutely love that. Also, I need to know, what are they feeding that little dog that they've had since they were children? Like, not a gray hair on him, like, just still kicking it. Like, what are you feeding him? I need to know, because I would need to feed it to my dogs, like.
Let alone have your dogs live that long, too.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying, like, jeez. All right, so the movie starts out with Cruella having a mysterious birth, and I love the way that this is narrated, too. This whole first part of the movie is Cruella narrating her life. So it starts out with Cruella telling us about where she started, and it shows her being born and how her hair was kind of already, like, her signature black and white hair is like a natural occurring thing, and it's just like kind of the start of her making statements in the world right out the gate. Literally, so just her starting out and also having a kind of troubled start as far as her childhood goes, and it shows that her going through school and having to continue to deal with this, having a mother who means well, wants the best for her, but also is just like kind of scared of the energy her daughter has, because Estelle has a very energy, as you would assume somebody who eventually becomes Cruella de Vil does.
Yeah.
And it shows her basically causing trouble to the point that her and her mother have to leave altogether. And this brings us to the introduction of the Baroness.
Mm-hmm. So what winds up happening is Estella and her mother need to move and change schools because Estella keeps getting in trouble for making fashion statements. And so they stop at the Baroness's house, which we kind of don't find this out later into the film. And Estella's mother goes to find her and is having a conversation with her and talking with her. And unfortunately, it was crazy the way that this happened. And it leads to Estella's mother dying. She gets pushed off of a balcony and dies to her death, unfortunately. And this starts the film where Estella is now an orphan and is on her own and meets Jasper and Horace, and the story kind of gets started.
I love this whole sequence, too, where she's having to chase after those two and find their little secret hideout, just the whole little chase scene. And, oh, also, the soundtrack in this film is awesome. Like every moment is brought to another level just because of the music choices for this film. And I absolutely love it. So, and this scene is one of them where she's having to chase them through the city to get to the hideout. And I love, which one was it? I think it was Horace who was just like, oh, we've lost her. And he was like, no, she's right there. I don't think
so. Yeah. And that's where their friendship starts. And they are all orphaned kids together in this little hideout. And they grow up and we see Estella and Jasper and Horace as adults, and they are stealing to make ends meet. And the movie basically just goes into where we start learning more about their characters. And Estella really wants to be a fashion designer, and she gets her big break with meeting the Baroness.
Yes. So she gets a job at one of the Baroness's stores, and she is getting frustrated because when she originally gets this job, she thinks she's going to get to really do what she loves, which is creating outfits and sewing. But she doesn't even get to be just like an alteration seamstress. She has to be a janitor. And eventually this drives her to a breaking point where one night at work, she just completely annihilates the front most important window of the store. And right when everybody's coming into work and realizing what she's done and she's going through the motions of getting fired, the Baroness shows up and everybody is losing their minds because they have to deal with Estella at this point still, and also with the window and how to deal with the Baroness and her reaction to all of this. And her reaction is completely unexpected. She absolutely is in love with the window. She thinks it's fantastic. It's the most interesting thing that's happened there in a long time. And she basically offers Estella a job. And she basically eats her business card and runs.
Mm-hmm. And from there, we see Estella starting to slowly make that transition into Cruella. But this... spoilers, I'm just saying right here before I get any further. Spoilers. So if you have not seen the movie, get out of this review.
If you haven't figured it out already, we're talking about this movie from beginning to end. Come on.
Yeah. We find out that the Baroness has this really important necklace that Estella lost when she was a kid. And so the whole time of what's happening is Estella, Jasper, and Horace are trying to set the Baroness up to fail, where Cruella is starting to come out, and they try to make the Baroness look bad. They try to stand her up at these parties where Cruella is slowly making an entrance and making a statement.
Yeah, so anytime the Baroness has an event, Estelle shows up as Cruella and just annihilates it. And my favorite is probably the first one that she does, where she comes in the black and white dress, mm-hmm. and get up for the black and white party where you're only supposed to be wearing, like, absolutely no colors allowed. And she just drops a match and her whole outfit becomes that beautiful red dress. I absolutely love that scene. And just like the whole slew of outfits that come after this are just mm-hmm. amazing. While all of this is going on, Estella is still working for the Baroness while designing dresses for her. You can tell that she's upset because some of her dresses that she's designing for her Cruella persona are getting stolen by the Baroness mm-hmm. for her shows. And to kind of combat this, Cruella pulls the most badass move ever by getting these custom beads for this beautiful dress that she's making that are actually moths. And when all of the dresses end up in a safe where they can't be stolen by Cruella and her goons, these moths end up hatching and eat all of the Baroness's dresses.
That was one of the most clever things of the film, I'll say that. That was very unexpected.
Yes, it really was. And that was such a cool setup and everything. I love how this movie had so many like heist elements to it as well, mm-hmm. between like them like doing all of their robberies at the beginning of the movie and them doing this whole sequence at towards the middle and then the end of the movie. It was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, and then from there, what winds up happening is we find out the big shocker where Estella's mother is actually the Baroness, and so there's a lot of mommy dearest kind of things going on, and it ends where Cuella comes and she is fully immersed and Estella is dead and Cuella lives. And the movie ends where they leave it open to, we're more than likely going to get a second movie.
Yeah, I really like how this whole end sequence happens where, for one thing, Cruella ends up getting the Baroness's right-hand mm-hmm. man to basically be like, oh no, you were meant to inherit all this. She's yeah. a complete B, and we're just done with her. Like, so they help her make a skirt parachute so she can die the same way her mother did, but also like come back as just Cruella and take over her what was rightfully hers. Mm-hmm. And then, did you watch the end credit scene?
I did, yeah.
Okay. This is actually one of my favorite parts of this whole ending, is because the way that it's implied is, at some point in the movie, Cruella does steal the Baroness's prized Dalmatian dogs and strongly implies that she skins them for her fur coat. But this is all just a ploy to make her look very villainous, where she's like, she wouldn't do that. She wouldn't actually do that to a dog. That would make you a complete monster. But she makes her think it, and that's enough to drive her crazy. And I love that the way that this movie ends is with, she gives the Baroness's dogs puppies to Anita and Roger. And I absolutely love this, because at the same time that they are receiving these dogs from Cruella, Anita is writing a book, like a fictional mm-hmm. book, and Roger is writing the song Cruella de Vil. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea that they also were able to benefit and make money off of this whole thing that happened because of the Baroness and her kind of like trying to screw everybody over, but then them getting the last say in it. And I love the idea that it's implying that the movie that we actually see as 101 Dalmatians is just a fictionalization of what happened in their lives. I love that idea. And I love that, because like it's kind of implied earlier in the film too, because there's a line that Cruella says about Roger where like she's like, oh, he always blamed me for him losing his job or whatever, or blah, blah, blah. And so like him just like I love the idea that she got made into a villain in this story by his account, just because he's petty about him having to lose his job over the whole thing.
So it is pretty interesting how they set it up that way with the live action 101 Dalmatians, because that's something that we don't see it, because in the live action 101 Dalmatians, Anita and Roger wind up meeting at the park and everything, but we don't know how they wound up getting Pongo, and I don't remember the other dog's name. I'm sorry.
Can we talk about, though, how this implies that their two dogs are from...
Stop. No.
No. No. Right. Pretend they're different Dalmatians. They're not the Baroness's puppies. They're dog's puppies. She was a responsible dog owner. The Baroness was a lot of things, but she was not an irresponsible dog owner. She went to the vet and got her dog spayed and neutered. So those dogs, those Dalmatians that she gave to Anita and Roger are rescues. They're okay. Rescues.
Anywho, but I like how they put that together, but now, yeah, what you just told me, they're separate dogs. They're different.
Yeah.
They're different.
Yeah, that's my headcanon, and I'm sticking to it.
Getting into some of the favorite moments from this film, the whole entire film was just so well done. I love this movie. It was great. But the first moment from what I have saved for some of my favorite moments was what you already said, is the montage of the different outfits, because all of the fashion was so well done, but I have two outfits that were my favorite. The first one being exactly what you said, was at the first party that we get to see the Baroness get upstaged by Cuella, is when that white cape dress, that dress was so pretty, but it gets burnt up into the red dress. I have to say that that dress was so reminiscent to the Hunger Games red dress.
I knew you were going to say that.
I saved the photos on here to even show you how similar they truly were. And they're identical almost. It's crazy.
So I want you to know that I'm planning on making this dress. And I was going to make it for Corella. And I was like sitting there looking at it. And I was like, if I make this, I can be Harley Quinn at the same time. Like I can use this red dress for my Harley Quinn dress. Now I'm going to use it for Katniss.
It's pretty identical, and that's what I thought was so interesting, is did they repurpose that same dress and just change it up a bit?
But, I don't know, but it was amazing.
That was awesome, and then my other favorite one was the Estella is dead look at the end of the film, where it's the black suit with the cape. I loved that look, and I loved the hair, just that whole entire thing.
The Dalmatian cape?
No, the ending where it's all, she's wearing all black.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, that one's really cool. So my favorite two are going to be, again, the red dress, the cape, the burn. That whole thing was just amazing. But my other favorite outfit, and I actually plan on making this. I'm just not sure when I'm going to have time. But I want to make the Dalmatian jacket that she did right after all the dresses got ate by the moths and the Baroness's show was ruined. She did like that big show right outside of her house. That outfit was my favorite of the whole night. And again, just like black bodysuit and then just like the nice Dalmatian coat over it. It was so cool.
And that's the thing, is they did so many cool looks, and the garbage.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, can we talk about the garbage? I absolutely love the garbage. And then the one where it was like the big, giant red and black frills, and she got on top of the car and just completely covered over all of the windows. Oh,
that one was really fun, too. All of it, just, again, the fashion. And that's kind of what feels very reminiscent of the Devil Wears Prada, too.
Can you imagine the amount of time it probably took them just to get Emma Stone into all of those outfits? And then, like, the amount of people who were probably under the dress at it, or any parts of the dress at any given time, just to help it give, like, that motion and whatnot. Just all of, oh, that had to have been a lot. Because,
oh, yeah.
I'll like, wear a big costume, like, that aren't even in any scale, like, anywhere close to these. And I need a handler when I go to conventions. So I can only imagine what it must have been like for her running around on set with these outfits on.
Let alone the weight of some of them, especially the garbage truck one, just how long that train was.
I think some of that had to have been computer generated. I think some of it right when she was getting on that, but then like when it drove off and it just like went on for freaking days. That was so cool though. But yeah, you're right. It had to have been so freaking heavy.
Yeah, I think of all of those dresses that people wear to the Met Gala or any of those big award ceremony shows. Another moment that I thought, and you had also mentioned this earlier, that I thought was really fun in this film was the moment where she's kind of over her job at this point and she doesn't care whether she's going to get fired or not. When she gets drunk at work and then she goes into the display and changes it where she says, "I'm sorry, darling, I can't leave you looking like this." And they play the song, "These boots are made for walking. That's just what they'll do."
I just love Emma Stone running around, like, singing the songs that are actually on the soundtrack throughout the movie. Because she does that for this scene, and then she does it right after the other scene, right after she does the Dalmatian outfit, where she's like, I can't even remember the song, but she was singing it as she comes up the elevator shaft.
Yeah. I thought that was a great little tidbit that they added, because it is pretty cool that you hear all of these different soundtracks going on in films, but they kind of made it sound like this is exactly what she's thinking in her mind. So we're in her mind while that's happening.
That's exactly what I was thinking too, because like the way that it's narrated as well, it's almost like Corella is still telling us the story through the narration, and just when you're driving your car and your radio becomes the soundtrack to your life, I guess.
Right. And then another cool moment for me was finding out Anita's last name is Darling, because I always thought it was so interesting in the original cartoon and then also in the first live action film, where she comes in, she says, "Anita Darling," and you just never knew that was her last name. So that was a really cool thing that they did.
Yeah, I really liked that. Also, I want to say that I loved all of the sequences of her growing up and when she's first introduced to school and she's trying to make friends, and just like the next scene is just immediately her getting in a fight.
I thought that was great that they changed it around like that, because normally I'll say in a lot of films when the main character is getting bullied, it's usually them getting beat up. You don't see it the other way around where they take action and do it themselves.
Yeah, she's like, oh, you think you're gonna talk some smack? Well, let me smack you around. Like, I love it. I love it. And her reversible little jacket was absolutely adorable. I actually got some fabric that is the inside of that jacket. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it yet. I don't have enough. I didn't buy enough to actually make a jacket out of it. I knew I didn't want to make the jacket, but I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it yet, but I have it. I've been thinking, because I bought that and like two other Corella fabrics. I'm thinking about making the Dalmatian jacket and then just using a patch of the different patterns that I bought from the Corella movie and using that as the inside lining for the jacket that I'm going to make. I thought that would be pretty cool because it's all like black and white and reds and stuff. So I thought it would be cool.
No, that'd be awesome. It is. It just goes to show with this movie or any other kind of fashion forward films is how much effort it goes into making costumes, clothing, and anything that's just handmade.
Yes, exactly. And I love how she was just so into sewing too, that she was just like, even before she got the really good job with the, well, good job quotations with the Baroness, that she was just like, can I please just like even just do alterations, please? Just let me have a sewing needle in my hand. Thank you. But another favorite moment of mine is probably going to be when they actually get the DeVille.
Yeah, that was a really cool thing that they did, because if you really look at it, the spelling is there. So it's funny how Horace says, it's spelled like devil, but it's really DeVille.
I love that. And I love like when they first get the car and they have to like correct him a few times before he's like, DeVille?
That's just very clever that they did those little small tweaks and changes to add on to the story. And there was something I wanted to add on, is that you had mentioned something a few reviews ago when we were recording, and I said, keep that and add that in when we actually get to this film, how you were saying about, and you kind of touched over it a bit earlier in this review as well, is where the story is set up where Anita's writing her own book and then Roger is making his own music. You had this cool theory of what the first live action 101 Dalmatians film is, and then also the cartoon.
Yes, so I think the cartoon and the live action film that we see, which shows Corella being the evil person who steals your dog so she could turn them into a coat or whatever, I think that's just a story that she fully signed off on for Anita and Roger to, like, because what she says about Roger is true. I think Roger is petty about the fact that he lost his job due to everything that happened with Corella and everything. So I think he's petty about that. And I think she understands that even though what everything happened had to be done so that balance or rightful heirs or whatever, however you want to see it, could be restored. So what was right could happen, justice served or whatever. Moving on. It had to happen, but she also wanted to do right by the people who were kind of collateral damage to it, who didn't necessarily deserve to get hurt by everything that happened, but still got caught up in it anyway. And so I think she gave full permission to both Roger and Anita to, for one thing, publish the song Corella DeVille, and then for another thing, publish the book 101 Dalmatians, which gives us the story of Corella DeVille being this villainous Baroness character. And I think that Anita, in a way, combined the Baroness with Corella DeVille to simplify and make like a kind of easier story to tell. But I think that's what it is. It's just Corella gave them these dogs. Whether or not they actually ended up married or anything like that is up for interpretation. But I think that the story that we get told is exactly the book that Anita is writing in that moment that she's adopting the dog from Corella.
Yeah, with that fabrication, because we were talking about that. And I said, that's the one thing that didn't make sense about this film versus the older ones is just the fact of Cruella is so evil in the cartoon in the first film and wants to turn puppies into fur. She wants to skin them alive. And then in this film that just came out this year, she covers that where she says, I would never turn puppies or dogs into fur. And that's where the joke of that outfit comes from, where it's fake fur, where the Baroness thinks it's her dogs that she killed.
And I love the idea that, like, she would obviously never, like, she's like, I'm not a monster, I would never, but yeah, she's okay with, like, people thinking that she would.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's, like, for her, it's kind of, like, the same way somebody, Mark Hamill, like, enjoys playing the Joker. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just she enjoys getting to embody that villainous character, even if it's not real or anything. She just, it's just fun to get to be the bad guy sometimes. Yeah. Even if it's just for pretend, like, as it should be. Don't be a bad guy.
Yeah, because they do that in the film too. They even give that the audience that gotcha moment where you think she actually went through and skinned the dogs, and exactly as you're saying, she says, oh, I'm not that kind of monster.
And they don't let you see the dogs until after she confirms that, no, I didn't do it.
Yeah. And it's so funny too how they wind up doing that where these Dalmatians are so evil and they're chasing her at the beginning of the film. And then towards the end, Cruella takes them as her own, which again, I'm wondering, are these the same dogs? Did they drink some kind of potion to make them live forever? Or is this a new set of Dalmatians?
Right. And if they are, again, what are you feeding your dogs? I need it for mine. Cause I would like them to last as long as dogs do in this movie. Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. And other than that, I mentioned it too. Another favorite thing that they did was just changing the characters around. I love that we got to see some more human traits with Horace and Jasper, of them being just more friendly, fun, friendly characters.
I loved that, like, romance too that was going on between Estelle and Jasper. Like, that was, I was there for it. I was sitting there like, yeah. Please kiss.
And that's what I love, that they make these films PG-13, is because there were a lot of adult things in this film, but they don't go over the top with it, mm-hmm, where everything is just, again, very provocative in these R-rated films and adding nudity and just, it was a great family-friendly film, but it also had that adult quality to it without giving it too much adultness to it, if it makes sense.
Yeah, I really did like that. And but at, like, even at the same time though, the way that Estelle and Cruella just, like, own a room was not in any way lewd, but also Emma Stone is sexy.
I have to agree and add on to that as well, is because I would say I have seen real things of that happening, such as my times when I went to parties or things like that. If a person walks into a room and they are dressed to a T and they own that room with just their personality, a personality can go such a long way. And that's what I am seeing with Cruella in these films, is when she is Cruella at all of these parties that the Baroness is throwing and having, is just a personality and how you feel can truly make a moment, if any of what I just said makes sense.
No, I totally get it. You can just, like, have, like, an air and, like, a confidence, yes, about you, and, like, it's enough to just make people go, mm-hmm, I'm listening.
Yeah.
You have my full attention.
Just making that statement, and that's what she did, Estella, when she was playing Cruella at those parties, is making that statement of, I am here, especially that part where she does come out, I think it was on the motorcycle, and she has future written on her.
Yeah, I love that. That one was so cool. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. But at the same time, like, she, the fact that, one thing I did like about this movie was the fact that it was her boldness and her just, like, I'm done and I'm gonna do the experimental thing that got her noticed. I did enjoy that.
I think in life, sometimes for certain things, it does take being bold and being very forward to get things done.
In the right moment.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say one other moment that would probably be my last favorite moment of this film is the transitioning of Estella turning into Coella, where they have the funeral for her and she is dead and becomes Coella in her entirety.
And Horace is at the funeral crying and Jasper's just like, she's literally right here, standing right next to you, dude.
That's what I loved about them as being a dynamic duo, is because one of them was more of the voice of reason while the other one was more of the dreamer, I would say.
Yeah, he was so cute, and I loved him and Wink. They were so cute.
Wink was fun. I loved the whole scene where it's, I am the exterminator. You see that? You see that big bug running through? Or that big rat? I don't remember what Wink was dressed as, but...
some kind of rat. That was hilarious. And then I also love the scene where he's being like, oh, they say that dogs and their owners, they end up looking alike. What do you think? And I've it covers so, his eye up.
I've seen so many posts where BuzzFeed has done that, where they show a list of 20 plus people where them and their dogs look alike and things like that.
I think that Clay looks like our dog, Scoob, because he's like got like the big beard and mustache thing going on, and Clay's always got like the big beard going on.
As much as I give my cat a lot of flack, I'll say, I will also add that my cat is me. She is 100% me sometimes. I'm sorry. My personality rubbed off on her.
Super sweet, but don't pet me.
Yeah. Aw, Mia. So I'll get into the ratings, and then I didn't look up any fun facts for this film.
Fun fact, Emma Stone is in it, and she's fantastic.
Yes, she is indeed. Keep doing what you're doing, Emma. We love you. So the critics and the audience score are pretty divided this time. Go ahead and give a guess of what you think each gave.
Well, if it's divided, I'm not really sure, because I'm going to be honest. I have the way that I feel about this movie, but I was going to assume based on how people just feel about Disney live action in general. And I remember there was a lot of people who weren't excited to see Cruella get made into a movie because she's a dog killer. And a lot of people were not in the same boat as me where they thought Emma Stone was going to be a good Cruella on top of it. So I'm going to say that the audience score, like I was going to say that the score all around was going to be low for this movie. But if it's divided, I want to say that the critic score is low and that the audience score is high.
Yeah, no, right on the nose right there. So the critic gave it a 74, where the audience gave it a 97.
Okay, yeah, that feels good. Because the thing is I can see where, because like the critics are like, critics, the baronesses of the world, and they probably had a lot of things that they didn't like about the movie. Like they probably watched the movie and heard Emma Stone singing the soundtrack in the movie and were probably like, oh, where I was like, oh, this is cute. They probably didn't like this movie for a number of reasons, where I think a lot of people who I talked to who went into this movie with a lot of reservations, came out of it going, oh yeah, this was a lot of fun and really good and definitely interesting on how they decided to take it. So I feel like that definitely reflects what my own experience with the movie.
For sure. So what would you say that your rating is then of this film?
I think everybody already knows, because I'm so basic and I'm so ready to give every movie a giant bag of popcorn. So I'm going to give it an extra, extra large bag of popcorn. And I'm going to say put some extra butter and popcorn salt on there, because the outfits are amazing. The soundtrack, amazing. Emma Stone, amazing. Like the whole cast, actually, just amazing. It is so fun to watch just the narration of Emma Stone throughout the story, and just getting to see Cruella come to life and the way that they kind of made her a good guy and took the monster aspect out of her. I enjoyed that. Now I can cosplay her guilt-free.
I have to second that. I will also be giving it an extra, extra large bag of popcorn. I just thought everything you said, I'll add that on as well, but it was just so well done. It was a different live action film, something I haven't seen out of Disney before. And so it was just really exciting to see this character that we have all despised for so long be brought into a different light. And I loved it. It was entertaining. It was fun. And Emma Stone did a fabulous job.
I just had like the best idea in my head ever. Okay, so let's make a sequel to this Cruella movie, right? But actually make a live action 101 Dalmatians. But Anita and Roger have actually gotten married. They've had a kid, and it's kind of like the format of the movie is kind of like The Princess Bride,
mm-hmm.
where like they're sitting at the bedside and telling the Cruella de Vil story, but it's the 101 Dalmatians, so it's like the villainized Cruella de Vil. And then at the end of the movie, it can just be Emma Stone knocking on the door and just like them opening the door and lightning bolts and everything coming down. Like, let's make this happen. I want this now.
I like it. I think that would be a great idea because it seems like for sure that they are going to make a second film at some point. So I am all for that idea. I think that would be just a fun concept to give more of an evil side that we see and know of Cruella and Emma Stone playing it, but then do the whole, gotcha, no, she's a lot nicer than that.
I really just want that, and I feel like they tried to do this in this movie. I want them to do the iconic scene of her driving the DeVille and just looking like crazed and deranged. Yeah. Like, I want that.
That's a good idea. Send it to Disney.
All right, I hope everybody is ready for next week's episode. It is going to be a mash, a monster mash.
The monster mash. Yeah, this will be a change of pace, but I think this is going to be perfect for the next month or so.
I know, I am really excited to start getting into the spooky season. If you're on my Instagram at all, you know I've been excited about it getting cold outside and getting to start to bring out my Halloween costumes and whatnot. So I'm very excited to start talking about horror and horror-related things on the channel.
For sure. And I'm excited that it is getting much cooler out to hopefully wear my super fluffy boots this year.
Oh, I've already been excited. Like, all of my sweaters and long sleeve shirts have started to come out. And I'm like, yay. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed this episode. And until next week, everybody, bye.
If you like Two Girls, One Review, go subscribe wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts.
Cruella de Vil! Cruella de Vil!